Chris Raby Show on Scoops with DannyMac.com. It is the Friday, November 6, 2020 edition of the program. Happy almost weekend to you. Happy to be with you talking some football as we wrap up another week. Excited for our chat with Ben Heisler coming up in just a few minutes. Ben from Sports Illustrated joins us every week. We talk DFS, we talk wagering. And I want to ask Ben about the gambling markets surrounding the election this week, because that was a lot of the focus on Tuesday night, was how the markets were moving and what we could or couldn't take from a predictive standpoint from those numbers. So we'll visit with Ben Heisler coming up in just a couple of minutes from Sports Illustrated. He'll give us his thoughts on the weekend coming up. As always, got to tell you that you got to go and subscribe to the Scoops with Danny Mac podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts, Apple, Spotify. Dan joined me yesterday and we got into it. We broke it down. Takes were served. We discussed a variety of things. We discussed the Cardinals, you know, sports. But we also discussed Miley Cyrus unfollowing Kendall Jenner after Kendall's Halloween birthday party. Yeah, how about that? What you know about Montel Williams, Jerry Springer, and Ricky Lake? We covered that. How about Bozo the Clown and the grand prize game? We covered that. And you can listen at scoopswithdannymac.com. or by checking out the podcast. Send me an email, chris@scoopswithdannymac.com. And send me a tweet. If you do subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, screenshot it, send me a picture, and I will send you a Scoops with Danny Mac hat. Let's see. Our latest winner is Trevor, who subscribed. Shout out to Trevor. And your hat is in the mail. chris@scoopswithdannymac.com. I should mention a huge get that I'm very excited about. Coming up after Ben Heisler, we will visit with my buddy, one of my best friends in the world, Dylan. I was the best man in his wedding. We're fraternity brothers from Mizzou. And his three-year-old daughter is going to make football picks for us. So we have a gambling baby on the show. And she is a sharp. She is a, trust me, she's moving some markets. And we're going to have a pick from Natalie, from NatCat, coming up in just a bit. So we will get to that after we visit with Ben Heisler. But excited to have gambling baby NatCat join us on the show. She's going to be joining us and giving out winners every Friday. So without further ado, let's welcome in Ben Heisler from Sports Illustrated. You go to si.com/fantasy, si.com/gambling. That's where you read Ben and the great Sports Illustrated staff. You can also listen to their podcasts and check out all of the information on daily fantasy and wagering, not just football, but we've got the Masters coming up and more. And Ben, I'm sure it warmed your heart as a gambling guy, as someone who works in the industry on Tuesday night throughout the evening. Election coverage in a large part was dominated by the wagering markets and how they were affecting things or affecting everyone's perception of things.
Yes. Right. And what was amazing about it too, Chris, was how much, listen, we know that the odds move in real time when we're used to watching different sporting events and knowing that, you know, pitch by pitch sometimes for Major League Baseball or play by play for NFL and college football. Like we're bettors are used to seeing that, but I found it to be remarkably staggering that, you know, at one point, I think Trump in the middle of Tuesday night was, he had gone from plus 185 to minus 200. And then, I mean, the numbers just kept catapulting up and then went back all the way down. The amount of swings over the course of this game, and I know that a lot of the people are getting their jokes off with regards to, you know, Atlanta blowing a lead. That's sort of been, you know, all right, everybody on Twitter is a comedian now. It's been fascinating. It was remarkable. And you would have a 3-minute update where Trump would have gone from, you know, minus 250 to minus 375. It just happened so fast. And I think the biggest lesson that I learned from at least day of night of political betting, Chris, was in large part, bettors are pretty sharp a lot of the times. They're going off of the market. They're going by the plays and the statistics and the information that they know. They treat it as if, all right, this week has led up to me evaluating this process. And then once it became political, that process kind of just went out the window, right? People saw the trends. They thought immediately, well, if it's going in this direction, based on what we saw 4 years ago, this is the number that I have to be on, or this is where I need to be. I need to be on the right side here. And the reality was, is that a lot of this information, if you would have treated it like a normal bet, if you would have looked at the information in front of you and said, this is how the game, it's like game script, right? And I know I'm rambling, but I think this is important, right? So let's say, you know, Baltimore and Indianapolis, that's a game that's on for this week. We've seen the total go from 45 to 48, and there is an analogy here, right? So now you're learning that the game script is likely to be a little bit more back and forth than people would initially anticipate. We knew that Pennsylvania was not going to be able to start counting votes until after election night. And so we knew a lot of this, but because information came in so rapidly and the lines and odds kept moving the way that we did, we threw out that process. I shouldn't say we. I think a lot of people that were betting this election as a result of the line movement, they threw out that information that they had and just decided to go with immediate reaction as opposed to an actual process.
I think it's a really, really good point, Ben. And I think that for, you know, people like you who cover this and cover these markets and cover the fact that, you know, there are more and more, I guess, companies is what you call them because they're trying to make money that are involved in online wagering and legalized wagering and live betting. It's important, I think, to realize that, like, what these markets mean and what they meant on Tuesday night weren't necessarily based on, you know, information they were getting as results are being tabulated in real time. Markets are manipulated and moved based on bettors. And like you said, it's the sharp bettors betting a ton of money who are actually the ones dictating things. So I think people sometimes misconstrue betting markets for data and sometimes misconstrue odds for, you know, complete, unequivocal facts.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's 100% true. I think that's one of the big lessons when people get into betting. They immediately look and evaluate the odds and say, well, these odds are wrong. You know, if we're going back to that Baltimore and Indianapolis example, right? You know, Baltimore is one of the best teams in the AFC. They should be more
They're
than
not a- wrong. You're a square.
Yes, exactly. Like, there's a reason for where the odds are set where they are. And if the sharp money comes in initially, then they will adjust. And obviously there's an evaluation too on where public money is going to come in. The goal of the sports book, and again, I can't stress this enough, the goal of the sports book is to get equal action on both sides, right? That's the goal, because they don't want to get killed on a game. And if they end up doing exceptionally well in a game, that's not typically what they're striving for. They want the guaranteed profit margin every time. So remember that for anybody that's listening that, you know, is trying to evaluate like what the odds are supposed to represent, they are supposed to be the middle ground for where bettors and sharp money and everything comes in so that the sports book ends up getting a guaranteed positive result.
Ben Heisler is with us from Sports Illustrated. Before we jump into some of the football this weekend, I'll just ask you, Ben, it would have been maybe laughable or maybe even a Saturday Night Live skit as recently as, I don't know, the 2008 election to imagine that you could sit around and gamble legally live and help make states would be raking in profits based on an election night. So I'll ask you, and I'll put you on the spot, is there another area in which you could see legalized gambling getting into the mix, changing the way people, you know, the way we consume a story or the way we consume an event outside of, you know, sports, award shows? What's next that we're going to be able to bet on?
It's a great question, Chris. I probably need to, I hate to give you the cop-out answer of I'm not entirely sure. Because I think especially with the election, I was getting a lot of questions this week about whether or not, you know, should betting on the election be legal in the United States? And my first thought was it's probably a horrific idea right? Because you already have enough money involved in politics to begin with. And yes, it'd be nice for the states to be able to, you know, reap some of the benefits from people betting on the election, but
nice for them.
Right. But the idea of, you know, a candidate possibly jumping in to try and persuade the odds in a different direction to be able to get any sort of gain from it, that kind of worries me, especially with democracy on the line. I don't know. I don't know what's next.
Yeah. I guess the limits, I guess limits would be set where, you know, you can't put $100,000 or something, but maybe you'll be able to bet on, to keep it in politics, Supreme Court decisions in real time or trials. Maybe you can bet on IPOs and companies that are going to be on Wall Street. Like maybe the gambling markets will try to take a piece of day trading. I don't know.
Right. Or maybe, you know, maybe it sort of becomes sort of an auction style where you're trying to set an over under on, you know, Black Friday sales, and maybe companies is a way to create some sort of new engagement. Like let's say, Best Buy, you know, Best Buy, great current example, you know, of a company here. But let's say Best Buy is trying to find ways to create more engagement on a Black Friday sale, right? And so they're setting this new Samsung 55-inch television, and you can bet on sort of the over/under and whether or not, you know, maybe they have a partnership with a different book, and then if you're based off your bet, you can get a certain percentage off the television. Like maybe that's another way for companies to try and take advantage of a market that is going to A, get people interested in their products, but B, also find new ways to create engagement and possibly even some savings as well. That one just kind of popped up in my head. I don't know if there's any validity to it. Probably not.
No, I like that. It's like, what would be the total number of dollars in revenue that Amazon will do on Black Friday from 12:01 a.m. Eastern to 11:59 p.m. Eastern? It would be like, you know, in hockey, there's a bet called the Grand Salami, where you can bet on the over-under of the total number of goals scored that night in every single NHL game.
Right. You know, and like, I know that Fox has been doing their sort of Super Six, where they say you can win like $1 million of Terry Bradshaw's money, which we know isn't Terry Bradshaw's money because Terry Bradshaw is still doing the Fox gig, so he needs the money. That's another conversation for another time. But there's all these different elements where you're sort of creating these little pick'ems, and the odds statistically of getting them all right are almost slim to none. But what does it do? It creates engagement. It creates conversation. It gives you, it's like picking a perfect bracket, right? Like the odds in picking a perfect NCAA bracket are like one in several million. But if you get it, then you win $1 million every year from Warren Buffett or something like that. You know, people are still going to do it because it's reaching for something that seems so impossible to get at the end of the road, but you want to still be able to do it.
Oh yeah. It's the same reason that we buy the single $2 Powerball ticket, which it's funny, like
correct,
the jackpot's at 50 million. It's like, it's not really enough. And then it gets up to like 500 million. You're like, all right, now I'm engaged. And you
right.
Know,
like, do you feel like, I don't know if there's such thing as a sharp lottery player or a sharp Powerball player, but the time that you should be playing is immediately after the massive jackpot is already reached.
Yeah. And I guess when
it's not as fun.
And all of us that play when it gets to the massive jackpot, you're spending your $2, your $4, and you're essentially buying 48 hours of just, you know, every 20 minutes in the car thinking like, well, if it did happen, here's what I would do. You're paying for the fantasy. You're paying for the fantasy. Ben Heisler is with us from Sports Illustrated. Speaking of fantasy, let's talk about this weekend. And man, it was a weird weekend in the NFL last week, Ben, because we saw a couple of upsets. We saw Cincinnati knock off Tennessee in the early game. We saw, I guess it certainly would have been an upset if the Cowboys had beaten the Eagles, but two bad teams, one of them just far worse than the other, kind of slapping each other around. Then Daniel Jones and the Giants almost coming back and beating the Bucks. Do you feel like we're on the verge of maybe having one of those sharp weekends where the public just kind of gets destroyed? We haven't seen that yet to this point.
I would disagree with you, Chris. I think the public and also sharp bettors got destroyed last week with so many.
So everyone got destroyed.
Well, everybody except for the sports books. You know, the sports books actually did very well. Favorites were big on the board. Underdogs went 10-4 against the spread in week 8. And then there were several.
Okay. And a number of those home dogs like Cincinnati,
yes,
right?
And absolutely. And there just wasn't enough. there wasn't enough money bet on the other side for either sharp bettors, or for the public. So they,
so like you said earlier, exactly what the sports books want, they got last weekend.
Well, they wanted more equal. If they wanted a massive profit margin, then yes, of course. But I think going into those games, a lot of the
there wasn't massive liability.
Massive liability on the line, and they ended up having a really good day. And sometimes that's always why I like when I hear, what the sports books need as far as which games they need to win. You know, sometimes even if I feel like it's the wrong play, I'll still jump on board because more often than not, the sports book is winning money as opposed to losing money. And that's just another opportunity to fade the public as well. But it was remarkable to see so many underdogs win outright, go 10-4 against the spread. And this week, just sort of taking an initial look at what the schedule looks like, I'm having a hard time with it. I'm having a hard time finding where a lot of these key advantages are. I suppose you're looking at the Giants, but that line has already shifted from a favorable number. It was at +3.5 down to +2.5. They're coming off a short week, but they played very well against Tampa Bay and they covered the spread in that matchup. I suppose Buffalo is a home dog against Seattle is intriguing, although I'm going to be on the other side. Colts at home, a home dog against Baltimore. Again, I'm going to be on the other side there. I'm just having a hard time other than maybe the primetime games of the Cowboys, I think 14 points at home against Pittsburgh, which has a tendency to occasionally let teams hang around. I'll probably end up getting on the Cowboys side, especially if that number goes to 14.5, which I think it could, especially because nobody wants to bet the Cowboys this year. They don't have a win, Chris, against the spread all season long.
I was going to ask you exactly about the Cowboys because last weekend they were the Sunday night game when people were trying to probably recover and probably try to make up some losses. But how do you view and balance, Ben, a team like the Cowboys, which is always one of the most public teams in all of sports, but then also a public team in the Cowboys who now have not covered, and you have to imagine, sharp money on them last weekend, sharp money on them this weekend. It's not too often that a very, very, very public team is also getting sharp money and then also not covering.
Correct. Although I would make the argument that I don't think the Cowboys remain a public team anymore. I think bettors have gotten...
Well, I just mean in terms of like if you're a casual sports fan or a casual football fan, you're like, the Cowboys, Notre Dame.
Oh, for sure. But I think that's always been true with the exception of these last few weeks. I think the public has gotten burned enough on the Cowboys over the course of this year to say the hell with them. Like, we're done. I can't keep banging my head against the wall and hoping for a different result. And so that's why I think you're seeing a little bit more sharp money coming in because the line continues to get more and more inflated. It's like what we saw with the Jets, and then the Jets ended up covering at home against the Bills a couple weeks ago, and they haven't, they didn't cover against the Chiefs. They're still only with one win, against the spread. But at some point, the sharp money knew that the line would be too inflated one way that the Jets would be able to hang around. And maybe this is an opportunity for Dallas at home just to be able to put something together, to have some sense of pride going up against the Steelers. Now, is Garrett Gilbert going to be the answer? Probably not. But there's still plenty of talent on the offensive side of the ball. Zeke Elliott has not gotten himself going this year. You saw Michael Gallup finally get more targets in this offense. They still have Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. Like, there's still enough talent to theoretically hang around, and there's no tape on Garrett Gilbert, which is part of the reason I'm looking at the Cowboys as a first half. It +7.5 against Pittsburgh. That to me is a bit intriguing, although Pittsburgh's also been a really good first half scoring team this year as well. So I do think there is a little bit of value on Dallas, especially at home, getting the 14, possibly 14.5, depending on where you look. And you just kind of have to hold your nose and say at some point they're going to get a win against the spread. It's almost more impossible, right, to go 0-16 than it is to go 0-16 against the spread.
Yeah, I understand completely. You're like, it's the law of averages. At some point it's going to happen. But yeah, again, from just an emotional standpoint, I would still be a little squeamish thinking about going to the window to lay points, to take the Cowboys, even if it's +14, maybe if it gets up to, 14.5, 15, but holy cow, something's got to give at some point.
No, 100%. It's one of those where you just hold your nose and just say, I'm doing what the data suggests I should, which is never how you should feel always going into a bet, but sometimes you just do it.
Hey, maybe the data proves now that Mike McCarthy isn't that good of a head coach, or is it just a bad situation?
No, he's a bad head coach. Like, he's
the play calling's the exact same. Like, it just looks like it's looked.
Yeah. Yeah, like you wonder, like, what would happen if somebody else came in and ran the Dallas offense? Like, how much better would it be? I think it would be substantially better. Like, I don't think he's a particularly good head coach. I think Aaron Rodgers saved him for a long time in Green Bay until that relationship became inevitable, that it was going to come to an end. And you're seeing it play out now. And he's got, I think, what, 5 years left on that deal at $30 million? I mean, It's delightful Schadenfreude for anybody who enjoys rooting against the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones like I do. Enjoy this mess that you've created for yourself.
It's funny in sports, but especially I think Major League Baseball and the NFL, that as often as we push and we celebrate innovation and thinking outside the box, it's kind of the same group of retreads that keep getting these jobs. And if you are a good position coach, then you become a coordinator. If you're a great coordinator, then you become a head coach. And then if you're a shitty head coach, you go back to being a coordinator. Correct. And then you get another job to be a head coach like 3 years later. Like, I get that some guys are just really good coordinators. Like, Wade Phillips is just a good defensive coordinator, and he probably would never have been a great head coach. Rod Marinelli is a great defensive line coach. He will probably never be a great head coach. Maybe the same with Matt Nagy, but they just keep hiring the same guys. At least, like, you know, in the NBA, we're taking guys from – you know, the analytical side of things and the video room and Eric Spoelstra, and, you know, we're doing the same thing in the NHL, but the NFL just kind of throws the same guys back in the hat and mixes them up, and then Norv Turner ends up with another job in 8 months.
That's a very fair point. The one part that I'll slightly disagree with you on is the Nagy hire, because he came from arguably the most efficient offense in the NFL in Kansas City.
100%. I'm forecasting what might happen to Matt Nagy in 3 years if things keep going like this.
Oh, 100%. Like, there's a theory that I thought about in my head about Eric Bieniemy, the current offensive coordinator in Kansas City, getting a job.
Stud.
The Bears collapse upon themselves. Nagy gets let go along with Ryan Pace. And then he just goes back to Kansas City. Mahomes puts up just as good numbers because it's Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. And Nagy gets some of the credit because he's right on board with that team, and then he gets another opportunity, and he also has a fairly decent record above 500 during his time in Chicago. Now, how much of that is you know, a reflection on elite level defense? That's certainly a fair argument to play against Matt Nagy, but you're right, like, more innovation and taking a few more chances is not something that you typically see in the NFL. And frankly, the last time that they did, you know, I can think of two sort of examples where teams kind of went against the grain. The first was the Joe Judge hiring with the New York Giants, right? Here's a special teams coordinator, special teams guys barely get opportunities, but we've seen it be successful before. You know, I've always been an advocate that I thought Dave Tobe, who was in Kansas City for a long time, was a Chicago, helped develop Devin Hester, would have made for a terrific head coach at one point. Been around enough really smart people to have gotten that opportunity. He never did. And Joe Judge, say what you want about the Giants' record in the midst of a rebuilding, and, you know, whether or not Daniel Jones has regressed, he certainly looks like he has, but that defense is playing really well. They've had some great special teams plays. You know, they had some opportunities called back, but they're playing hard. And, like, you could make an argument that if the rest of the NFC East continues in their direction, the Giants still might have a chance to steal that division. And they took a chance on him. The other thing is with Buffalo and Josh Allen, I think a lot of people mock that pick. They really did. He was not an analytically sound quarterback. And they said, we are going to take this guy that we feel can develop into the traits to make him a good player in our system, deal with weather in Buffalo that can handle the city. Like, they took a lot of other elements besides what they found in the data. And, you know, the first several games of the season, he was looking like an MVP candidate. So I always applaud teams for trying to do something a little bit different, to go against the grain, to try and take some chances. And you're certainly seeing it now with more opportunities on fourth down. I admire a lot of those coaches that aren't punting on fourth and one. There's more ways that you're starting to see some of these chances come through. But you're right, baseball, football in particular, it's a lot of the old boys network. It's a lot of the same things that you know. Hire what you know as opposed to taking a chance on what you don't. But hopefully that changes in the next few years.
Shout out to Dave Tobe and Devin Hester. Shout out to Jeff Joniak. Devin Hester, you are ridiculous. Oh, my goodness. Ben Heisler, before we let you go, give me an idea now as we talk about the markets and we look towards DFS this weekend and also potentially some wagering opportunities. You touched on a couple of games that maybe we're a little unsure of from a wagering standpoint, but from a DFS standpoint, is there a game or a couple of games where you think there are some potential stacks and some advantageous angles that we might be able to hone in on here over the next few days?
Yeah, I'll sort of combine them into one. I mentioned the Baltimore and Indianapolis game as an opportunity to be a low ownership stackable option. I think this is a great opportunity for Lamar Jackson to get himself back on track. He's been dogged this year, you know, and looking at traditional leagues, you know, hasn't been even a quarterback one this year. But if you look at, you know, DraftKings scoring in particular, he's still a top 10 quarterback. Even in a bad game last week, he still put up just under 19 fantasy points. And right now his projected ownership is less than 9%. It's Lamar Jackson.
Advantage of a little recency bias, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was, you know, I wrote him up over for my values article over at DraftKings with Michael, at Sports Illustrated with Michael Fabiano. He does his values. I do my favorite low ownership plays for the week. Lamar Jackson, the last time he was less than $7,000 on DraftKings was a full calendar year ago. It was November 3rd, 2019, going up against the Patriots, in which a lot of people also thought it would be a low-scoring game. But sure enough, Baltimore won 37-20. Lamar Jackson just finished with under 29 fantasy points in a win. Like, to me, this game against the Colts feels like it has the opportunity to be a sneaky shootout. We've already mentioned that the total's gone up 3 points. I like the fact that they're on the track in Indianapolis. It's indoors. So I think Lamar is in play. I think Marquise Hollywood Brown is in play. Mark Andrews. We saw the emergence of J.K. Dobbins last week. He's going to be able to possibly catch some passes as well. And then I think there are options on the Indianapolis side that you could actually run back and feel pretty good about. Like, is Nyheim Hines going to be more actively involved in the passing game? We saw the emergence last week. Marcus Johnson is bare bones minimum pricing over on DraftKings, and he has 12 targets over the last 2 weeks and caught 7 passes for 147 yards. So that's another big play threat that if he gets into the end zone or just catches one or two big catches, he's going to more than pay off his minimum salary. So there's a lot of intriguing options, I think, in that game that have the, you know, possibility for low ownership. And that's one of the games that I'm definitely going to be stacking this weekend.
I love it. Ben Heisler from Sports Illustrated. Go to si.com/gambling, si.com/fantasy. You can get the Vegas Whisper picks. You can get the optimizers. And, man, I'm sure over the next couple of days, even as we head into an NFL weekend, you guys are going to be loaded with Masters content too, huh, Ben?
Yes. Very excited about what we will be able to bring for the Masters coming up next week. Have a fun podcast guest involved with one of the sharper minds in the industry. We will continue to provide picks and information from Metric Gaming, which has one of the best golf models in the world over in London. And I should also mention too, Chris, for anybody that enjoys a little action on the ponies, the Breeders' Cup is this weekend, and we have in Frankie Tadeo, one of the sharpest dudes out there when it comes to horse racing. He's been covering races that you've never heard of before over the course of the year. He's hit on one bet that paid out at 443-1 earlier this year, and he's been just prepping up all throughout the summer and all throughout the early part of the fall for the Breeders' Cup. And one of the things that SI Pro members are able to have is our Discord chat that's exclusive for our members. And he is giving full out analysis and picks and opportunities to go ahead and leverage a little bit when it comes to all the Breeders' Cup action for today on Friday, as well as on Saturday. So for anybody that's looking for a little bit of extra action, plus we have UFC, it definitely pays off to be an SI Pro member.
SI.com/gambling, SI.com/fantasy. What a heck of a next week it's going to be, man. Enjoy the NFL action this weekend, and we'll talk next week. Appreciate it as always.
You got it, Chris. Talk to you soon.
Let's take a break. When we come back, gambling baby, Natalie, my buddy Dylan's 3-year-old daughter, joins us. She's got a winner this week. She's got a pick that Dylan says she's very fired up about, so we'll get to that next. It's a Football Friday on the Chris Raby Show. Back in a moment on Scoops with DannyMac.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back in, hanging out for a couple more minutes on a Football Friday. Chris Raby Show on Scoops with DannyMac.com. All right, very excited to get a gambling baby in the mix. You know, throughout the week, we always try to bring you the best information. We have Rick Gaiman on the NFL from Rick Rungood, who provides a statistical and analytical look at the daily fantasy market for the PGA Tour. He's been incredibly profitable for our listeners. We have Ben Heisler from Sports Illustrated, who breaks down stuff from an algorithm standpoint to prepare you for the weekend. And now, after some weeks of negotiation, we have finally closed a deal on another expert to join us and get us set for a Football Friday. We'll welcome in her legal guardian. That would be her father, my buddy Dylan, who joins us from Chicago. Dylan, thanks for jumping on the show, man. And your daughter, Natalie, is going to start picking some games for us.
She sure is, Chris. Long time, first time here. Happy to be with you.
It's great to be with you, buddy. What a week it's been for gamblers. Could you have imagined? You and I remember in Chicago, we're watching the 2008 election night coverage, and in Chicago was obviously such a huge deal with Barack Obama running, but could you ever have imagined that just a dozen years later, live wagering odds and the gambling markets would have dominated most of the coverage of election night, at least I think for most people on social media? That was, I was thinking about you on Tuesday, buddy.
It was truly an incredible evening for those who were desperately hitting refresh on the Bovada live betting markets. Going into the day, Vice President Joe Biden, I think, was anywhere from a -250 to -350 favorite, depending on which service you looked at. At one point, as the returns started coming in on Tuesday evening, he got all the way up to a 5-1 underdog. 5-1 underdog. Jeez. You could have gotten +250 odds easily on both candidates if you had just been feverishly hitting refresh on your browser, which I might have been.
It was amazing. I asked this question to Ben Heisler. Let me ask you real quick. What is the next thing that we will be able to wager on that will completely shake up the landscape? Because we have sports, we've got like entertainment and like, you know, the Oscars, we've got politics. What will be the next thing that we can bet on?
Well, I'm going to flip the question a little bit. And as you know, the only thing that's legal in the United States is to bet on sports. I think the better question is when is the United States going to shift and allow what the offshores and the betting markets in Europe do, because you can literally bet on anything. Do you know that in Europe, you can walk into a sports book and you can actually create a proposition and they will give you odds on it?
What do you mean? Like for what?
I could walk into a sports book and say, Chris and I, we're going to go play St. Andrews Golf Course. Here's both of our handicaps. I want you to give me odds on our match today. They would literally, if it's verifiable, they will literally create odds for you. Maybe that's a little bit of a stretch because it's not verifiable, but if
you both have a gin, it is.
Exactly. So point is that we're almost out of things to gamble on. I mean, you can gamble on the hot dog eating contest on the 4th of July. You can bet on every political outcome. You can bet on celebrity outcomes, reality TV outcomes. And so I hate to dodge your question, Chris, but frankly, I think we're almost out of things to gamble on.
Well, it's a good thing we're not, and we're going to bring in your sweet daughter, Natalie, who turned 3 last week on Halloween Eve, right? How was the big third birthday extravaganza?
Well, it was a pretty big party. There was 4 people there, in addition to my wife and I, which were my parents and my wife's parents. So we had a rager of 7 total people, and we had a great time. There was a lot of balloons, a lot of pizza, and a lot of alcohol, and a lot of presents for the little one.
And now we're getting her into gambling. So once you turn 3, you come on the Chris Raby Show, and you make a pick. And, you know, no pressure, but since she is of legal age now to make a selection on the show, I'll turn it over to you, Dylan. I don't know how much of the process you want to detail, but this is the first pick for Nat Cat. And again, I guarantee nothing but winners after winners after winners. Give us the first Nat Cat Football Friday pick on the Chris Raby Show?
So, as you can imagine, we've been poring over the data all week, looking at matchups.
Sure.
Key names.
I hope
like,
she didn't drink too much at the party before she got into the numbers.
A little too much apple juice, but she's recovering just fine. And we honed in on the Pittsburgh Steelers visiting the Dallas Cowboys as the game we were really targeting this week. I explained to her, you know, the Cowboys have a little bit of a precarious quarterback situation on their hands. The Steelers are riding high, big win last week. They're undefeated. Natalie pointed
out.
Cowboys
had a guy who went to James Madison was their star. I didn't know they had a football team.
That's new information to me. I did not know where that gentleman played college football.
DiNucci went to James Madison.
Okay, got it. But what Natalie pointed out to me was that the Cowboys are 0-8 against the spread this week. And so traditionally a contrarian might say, well, they're due. Natalie said, that's bad. They're 0-8 against the spread, and they're going to be 0-9 against the spread after Pittsburgh Steelers come into town. So she's riding with the Pittsburgh Steelers minus 14. She doesn't care about laying 14 points. She's happy to do it. When she sees value, she's grabbing it.
All right, the pick is in. Nat Cat, who just celebrated her third birthday last week, is on the Steelers minus 14. Lock it in, the first Nat Cat Football Friday pick. It's great stuff, buddy. We'll talk to both of you guys next week. My people, we'll talk to Natalie's people, and go Steelers.
All right, good luck to all those winners out there.
Well, there you have it. Loaded up with winners and loaded up with advice from Natalie and also from Ben Heisler. Big thanks to Ben. Thanks to Dylan. And thanks to Nat Cat, our 3-year-old gambling baby. Excited about her getting on a roll and this thing taking off. So take the Steelers minus 14. This has been another week on the Chris Raby Show. We'll talk to you on Monday. Go ahead and subscribe. Leave us a review. And until Monday, Chris Raby saying be nice to each other. And as always, peace! It's filled up with the things.